Good afternoon. You're listening to KMXT 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. At present, light rain and fog slash mist in Kodiak, 45 degrees Fahrenheit for today. Showers likely, mainly before 4 p.m., cloudy with a high near 47. An east wind around 10 miles per hour, chance of precipitation is 70%. For tonight, a 40% chance of rain, mainly before 4 a.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 42. An east wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm. For Saturday, a 20% chance of rain before 10 a.m., mostly cloudy, then gradually becoming sunny with a high near 52. A calm wind becoming northeast, around 5 miles per hour. For Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 42. Light and variable wind becoming west, 10 to 15 miles per hour after midnight. And for Sunday, sunny with a high near 54. A west wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour becoming light and variable in the afternoon. And for Sunday night, mostly clear, with a low around 43, a south wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour. Looking ahead into the upcoming week, Monday mostly sunny with a high near 52. Monday night, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, with a low around 43. Tuesday, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, with a high near 50. Tuesday night, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, with a low around 43. Wednesday, rain likely, cloudy, with a high near 50. And for Wednesday night, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, with a low around 43.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The massive infrastructure overhaul package President Biden's been promoting across the country is now a lot smaller. Facing stiff GOP resistance, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki has announced a counteroffer.
From $2.25 trillion in additional investment to $1.7 trillion.
But the proposal put forth by Senate Republicans has a price tag that's hundreds of billions of dollars below the White House's latest offer. A former Minnesota police officer will spend 6 years in federal prison for kicking and severely injuring a man during a 2016 arrest. Matt Sepik of Minnesota Public Radio reports a judge today rejected a sentencing agreement between prosecutors and 33-year-old Brett Palkowicz that called for between 4 and 5 years.
In an apparent case of mistaken identity, officers turned a canine on 57-year-old Frank Baker while responding to a report of a possible fight. Brett Palkowicz, who's white, kicked Baker, breaking 7 ribs and collapsing his lungs. Baker says he's happy with the 6-year sentence, but does not believe Palkowicz's courtroom apology was sincere.
I didn't accept that, sorry. You know, I forgave him long time ago, so I can move on.
Baker received a $2 million settlement from the city in 2017. He says he continues to suffer major health problems, including shortness of breath and PTSD. For NPR News, I'm Matt Sepik in St. Paul.
A new report finds murder rates are on the rise in many American cities this year. NPR's Kerry Johnson reports aggravated assaults also increased during the first 3 months of this year.
Scholars with the Council on Criminal Justice say the pandemic, social unrest, and the increased availability of guns contributed to the uptick in violence. White House advisor Chirag Bain says homicide is the leading cause of death for black men under the age of 45. The Biden administration has asked Congress for more than $5 billion to invest in street outreach and violence interruption programs. Those efforts target people likely to commit violence and those likely to be victimized by it. Researchers worry the violence problem will get worse this summer. Kerry Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
The first day of Israel's ceasefire with Hamas is for the most part still holding as both sides begin assessing the extent of their losses from 11 days of fighting. Meanwhile, fresh violence emerged at a pro-Palestinian rally in Pakistan. NPR's Dia Hadid says 6 people died.
The blast appeared to target followers of a conservative Islamic party. The rally was one of many that took place around Pakistan, where the Palestinian cause is a deeply emotive issue. In some rallies, protesters called for a holy war against Israel. It's a largely rhetorical call that reflects how many in the country view the Israeli-Palestinian conflict as a war against Muslims.
NPR's Dia Hadid reporting. This is NPR News.
Money for a 500-mile Alaska Long Trail will likely be included in the Alaska Legislature's budget this year. The nonprofit Alaska Trails Initiative came up with the idea for a multi-use trail between Seward and Fairbanks last year, has been trying to find money for it since. On Wednesday, Sitka Republican Bert Stedman and Anchorage Democratic Senator Bill Wilichowski sponsored an amendment to the Senate's version of the budget to set aside $13 million for the project. Boosters say destinations like the Appalachian Trail bring in tourists and revenue for the communities they pass through. That could especially be true in Alaska, where hiking already brings in many visitors. Plus, Wilichowski says, much of the path already exists.
And so this would be mostly connecting areas that aren't connected. And it certainly is making improvements and adding, you know, bridges and things like that.
Sections not yet built include a stretch between the interior towns of Healy and Inanna, as well as sections of the Iditarod National Historic Trail on the Kenai Peninsula. The amendment, which would pay for the project with federal COVID-19 relief money, passed the Senate unanimously. Because the money was not in the version of the budget passed by the House, it now has to be approved by a conference committee. Governor Mike Dunleavy will also take a look at the amendment. He's proposed funding the Alaska Long Trail before as part of a general obligation bond package that failed to get traction with legislators. Other sections of the trail include two long-sought stretches in south-central Alaska, connecting Girdwood with Anchorage and linking two disconnected paths in the city, the Chester Creek and Coastal Trails. Juneau's Docks and Harbors Board has been considering a fee hike, but residents of the harbors say that would make it difficult for them to get by. The proposal didn't pass in a vote by the Docks and Harbor Board Wednesday, but board members say rate increases are still coming. KTOO's Pablo Pena reports.
Erica Judson and Mike Riley are doing some work on their boat home, the Bailey Bay. They're commercial fishermen, so they also work where they live. Judson says she was born and raised on the water, and living at the harbor is just common sense.
It's so much more affordable than an apartment. You know, you rent a studio apartment for $1,000 a month when you pay a couple hundred bucks and live on a boat and enjoy the simple life and not have the stressors of, can I afford this, you know?
Harbor residents like Judson and Riley pay a monthly resident surcharge of $69 per month, along with mortgage and service fees. They pay about $312 a month to live at Statter Harbor. About 140 people live in Juneau's harbors. Juneau's Docks and Harbors Board proposal to increase those fees would have hiked up their living expenses by 100%.
I believe that to a point, I think it would be city-sanctioned gentrification.
And Riley says many of his neighbors are folks who, like him, just want to live a simple life. Many are elders who just can't afford to live anywhere else.
Doubling a liveaboard fee with a bunch of people that I know that actually are liveaboards that are pensioners, it'll break them.
Another issue for Riley and Judson is the facilities and public services. They have basic bathroom facilities and sewage pumps, but they're not always available. Security is also a problem. Riley says while there's not a lot of crime in Statter Harbor, there is crime.
I've seen junkies doing their thing. I've seen boats on fire up on purpose. I've seen people fighting. I had thousands of dollars in fishing equipment stolen off my boat in a 15-20 minute period.
In a special meeting yesterday, the Docks and Harbors Board voted against the proposal to raise residence fees for liveaboards. The board made the decision after extensive public comment against the hike. But Port Director Carl Yucatel says Juneau's harbor system still has financial needs it has to meet. The last time rates for liveaboards were raised was in 2008.
The bottom line is that we've got to remain solvent. We've got, and the asks of our harbor patrons, not just liveaboards, but all harbor patrons, is growing, and our ability to fund with rates that haven't changed in over a dozen years needs to be addressed.
On top of the lack of funds, Yucatel says Docks and Harbors hasn't seen any steady income since October 2019, before the COVID-19 pandemic. The lost tourism season in 2020 had a severe impact on the harbor system, which he says left it right on the cusp of a negative fund balance. Yucatel says Docks and Harbors needs money to pay for various infrastructure projects, including rebuilding the north end of Aurora Harbor and expanding the North Douglas Boat Lodge, along with paying off leased property between Aurora and Harris Harbors. Yucatel says regardless of the rate hikes being voted down, Juneau's Docks and Harbors have growing funding needs.
The Docks and Harbors Board will deliberately look at our fees and look to see what's appropriate to increase, and they'll be looking at probably the oldest fees or the fees that haven't been touched first and try to adjust appropriately.
As for the charge of gentrification in Juneau's harbors, Yucatel says that's not the intention of the board.
We're not targeting a group for the purpose of moving them out. We're looking at opportunities to adjust fees that have not been adjusted in a long time to serve the community without a burden on sales or property tax.
Yucatel says he can't say where the fees will increase, but one way or another, someone has to help pay the bills. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña.
When people think of trailer homes, many envision shoddy construction and unhealthy living conditions. But in places like Sitka, where construction costs are high and land availability is low, they're an important affordable housing alternative. For one Sitkan, renovating a trailer provided a path to debt-free home ownership. And as KCAW's Aaron McKinstry reports, this resident is not the only one looking beyond the stigma of trailer living.
Get back. Come on in. I don't let the dog out.
Oh, okay.
Robin Schmidt's black and white border collie Lady greets me at the door of her olive green trailer home. The mouth of the Indian River spills into Sitka Sound outside her kitchen window.
This is so nice.
Oh, thank you.
I just have to say.
It's not just the scenery that's inviting. Inside, the nearly 900 square foot home looks like any modern apartment or house. It's bright and tidy with hardwood cabinets and new appliances.
I've had a lot of people come over and they're just absolutely stunned when they come in. They're like, holy, you know, wow.
Schmidt hasn't always lived in a trailer. She used to own a big house with land in Wasilla, and had a big mortgage to go with it. But a few years back, after a divorce, she decided to make a change toward a simpler life. She was old enough to withdraw some of her retirement, and she started asking herself where she wanted to live and what she wanted to do next.
And I just kept coming back to the idea that being self-employed was the only thing that really worked for me after being an attorney for over 25 years, and that the place that I really wanted to live was Sitka. I really wanted to come back to Sitka, and I wondered how I could possibly afford to do that.
When Schmidt lived in Sitka before, she'd rented, but it was tricky to find a place that could accommodate her teenage son, dog, and cats. She looked at buying a house, and even places that needed a lot of work were out of her price range. Then she got a call from a friend asking if she'd be interested in a trailer that a local contractor wanted to sell.
And we did a walkthrough, and the place was really, it's 1984, and, you know, there was the paneling, and so it was really, really ugly. And I said, I only want the place if you gut it to the studs. I mean, new floor, new ceiling, new walls. I said, I don't want to see any paneling anywhere.
Finding a bank to finance the trailer renovation was a challenge, Schmidt says, so they drew up their own contract and payment plan. He replaced everything from the windows to the countertops, and the fully renovated trailer cost Schmidt just $75,000. That's around a fifth of what she would have paid for a house that still needed a lot of work. But despite Schmidt's success story, everyone from her father to her plumber has voiced skepticism. She thinks there's a stigma against trailers that doesn't exist for other affordable housing alternatives like tiny homes.
There's been the belief always is that trailers don't last.
Although many of Sitka's trailers are shoddy and unhealthy, Sitka building official Pat Swedeen says many people are pleasantly surprised at the quality of new manufactured homes.
They're not built like they used to be. They're built with much thicker walls. They have insulation equal to what a typical stick-built structure would have. I think that's an avenue that isn't getting enough attention in my mind when it comes to really trying to talk about affordable housing.
This is it.
This is one of the ones we're installing, yeah.
Developer Jeremy Twaddle owns Mountain View Estates.
This is a two-bedroom, one-bath home that we're installing now. It's what they call a single-wide. It comes in one section.
He slowly expanded the trailer court since he bought it 9 years ago. He barges the manufactured homes from down south, installs them on a permanent foundation, and sells them move-in ready. Even with the cost to ship the home and rent the lot, he says the price per square foot is about half of what someone would pay for a regular house in Sitka. And people have noticed. The remaining spaces are already promised to buyers, and the trailers haven't even arrived yet.
I'd say in the last year there's been a real uptick in this type of housing, I think due to the affordability, and not only in Sitka, but kind of nationwide. The manufactured home builders are backed up about 9 months in construction right now.
He says getting a loan to buy a trailer can be a challenge, but in Sitka, Alps Federal Credit Union offers financing. A bigger hurdle is land. There's not a lot ripe for development in Sitka anyway. And because of zoning restrictions, the space for trailer courts is even more limited. He says if the land was there, he'd keep bringing in trailers because as a lifelong Sitkan, he sees the need for affordable housing and the gap that they can fill, especially for those hoping to enter the housing market.
Just wanting people to be able to stay in Sitka and succeed and not get run out of town because there's only rental options or the homes are just too expensive.
For Schmidt, that's exactly what her trailer provides, a way to stay in a place that she loves and the freedom to live her life the way she wants.
I feel like I've gotten my life back without the debt hanging over my head. Yeah, it's about freedom to me.
If she ever decides to move, she thinks she could get her money out of her renovated trailer and then some. But if not, she says, she's gotten her living out of it. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
Just 2 years ago, the state released its MAT guide, a comprehensive set of recommendations for healthcare providers treating opioid use disorder. But a lot has changed since then, down to the name of the treatment. Back then, MAT stood for medication-assisted treatment. Now it's medications for addiction treatment. It's one of many changes outlined in the 2021 MAT guide, published by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. As Sabine Pooks in Kenai reports, those new guidelines say a lot about how much we've learned about treating opioid addiction in a short time.
One of its authors is Dr. Sarah Spencer. She works at the Nanilchik Traditional Council's Community Clinic and is board certified in family and addiction medicine.
And we're learning new things all the time about how to improve care for patients.
There are a lot of updates in this edition of the MAT guide. For one, the name change. Spencer says it's because researchers now understand medications like Suboxone aren't just supplements to other kinds of treatments when it comes to addressing opioid use. They work really well on their own.
The medications alone, even without psychosocial supports, can give significant benefits. So that was a big change in the recommendations.
Another update, there's no time limit on treatment. Spencer says research has found there isn't a benefit to stopping medication early. There are recommendations for addressing other substance use disorders in this guide, too. Spencer says 80% of the time she's treating opioid addiction, but she sees a lot of overlap with alcohol and stimulant use disorders as well. Heather Phelps, a mental health clinician with the state, was another co-author of the guide.
We wanted to incorporate a section about working in a pandemic situation. We really wanted to make sure that we had more Alaska resources and include some of the people that we knew were working with medications for addiction treatment in other areas. So like MAT in rural Alaska and working with, Department of Corrections and the Therapeutic Drug Court.
There are about 500 providers that can provide MAT treatment in Alaska. They're certified through the Drug Addiction Treatment Act of 2000 waiver, or DATA waiver. That number has grown by 100 from the time of the last MAT guide.
But just because we have an increase in it doesn't mean that all the DATA waiver prescribers are actually practicing. And so we're really trying to reach out to them.
Phelps says there's still stigma around MAT treatment.
And we know that there are many different pathways to achieve recovery. We have research upon research that shows that patients that take medications for addiction treatment actually do better in recovery, in long-term recovery.
Spencer, the Nanilchik doctor, says it's important to keep providers up to date on that research. As a specialist, she keeps up with the changing guidelines and recommendations for treating opioid use disorder.
But the typical primary care provider, isn't able to follow all those changes in the guidelines, on an ongoing basis, and they may kind of miss some of the updates to that. So by updating these general guidelines, it allows them to have a place to go where they can see what all the updated guidelines are.
The updated MAT guide is available on the Department of Health and Social Services website. Although at the time of this broadcast, the website is down due to a malware attack. Phelps says the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium is developing its own MAT guide for rural Alaska. She says that will come out later this year. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Dutch Harbor does it again. Alaska takeaways from the new U.S. Fisheries Report. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
Dutch Harbor held on to the title of top U.S. fishing port for the 23rd year running, with 763 million pounds crossing the docks there in 2019. The Aleutian Islands, home to North America's largest processing plant at Accutan, ranked second, and Kodiak placed third for total landings. Those are a few takeaways from the latest easy-to-read Fisheries of the U.S. report by NOAA Fisheries. For value, New Bedford, Massachusetts held on to the top spot for 20 years due to landings of pricey scallops. Naknek ranked second for value of the catch, followed by the Aleutians, Bristol Bay, and Kodiak. Eight Alaska ports, 40%, were in the top 20 for both U.S. seafood landings and values, and accounted for 24% of the top 50. In all, U.S. fisheries produced 9.3 billion pounds, worth $5.5 billion. 60% of the catch and 33% of the value were generated by Alaska. Salmon was the highest valued fish. Alaska accounted for 99% of the U.S. salmon catch. The average salmon price to Alaska fishermen was 81 cents a pound across the board, down from 99 cents in 2018. Alaska pollock was tops for fish processed into fillets and other forms. Second was sockeye salmon. For recreational fisheries, spotted trout was the top catch by U.S. anglers, followed by black sea bass and bluefish. And Americans were eating a bit more seafood, 19.2 pounds per person, up 0.2 from 2018. The U.S. Fisheries Report also covers trade, mariculture, and more, and is loaded with colorful graphics. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods in Kodiak. I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, Kodiak. You're listening to KMXT 100.1 FM. There is a light rain and fog slash mist over town right now. A 45 degree Fahrenheit temperature for this afternoon. Showers likely mainly before 4 p.m. Cloudy with a high near 47 and east wind around 10 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation at 70% for tonight. 40% chance of rain mainly before 4 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 42 and east wind around 5 miles per hour becoming calm. And tomorrow, Saturday, a 20% chance of rain before 10 a.m., mostly cloudy, then gradually becoming sunny with a high near 52, a calm wind becoming northeast around 5 miles per hour. Sunday, sunny with a high near 54, that looks to be a nice day, west wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour becoming light and variable in the afternoon. And for Sunday night, mostly clear with a low around 43, south wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour. And for Monday, mostly sunny with a high near 52. Looking over at Homer, 49 degrees Fahrenheit at present for today, 40% chance of precipitation, cloudy early, then off and on rain showers for the afternoon, a high near 50 degrees Fahrenheit, winds southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour, chance of rain is 40%. Looking at Anchorage, 49 degrees Fahrenheit at present for today, 5% chance of precipitation, cloudy skies with a high near 53 degrees Fahrenheit, winds south-southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Looking at the marine weather, Marmot Island to Sitka Act right now, small craft advisory through tonight. Today, a southeast wind of 20 knots in the morning, becoming variable 10 knots, seas to 9 feet with rain showers. For tonight, a north wind of 50 knots, seas to 9 feet. Saturday, a southwest wind of 20 knots, seas to 7 feet. And for Saturday night, a west wind of 20 knots, seas to 7 feet. Sunday, a southwest wind through wind of 20 knots, seas to 4 feet. And Monday through Tuesday, a southeast wind of 20 knots, seas to 8 feet. For the Shelikof Strait, today an east wind of 15 knots, seas to 4 feet. For tonight, a variable wind of 10 knots, becoming southwest 20 knots after midnight, seas to 4 feet. Saturday, a west wind of 20 knots, seas to 4 feet. Saturday night, a west wind of 15 knots, seas to 3 feet. Sunday, a southwest wind of 15 knots, seas to 3 feet. For Monday, a southeast wind of 15 knots, seas to 3 feet. And for Tuesday, an east wind of 15 knots, seas to 4 feet. Synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front over the northern Gulf moves over the North Gulf Coast Friday afternoon. A 1,003 millibar low, 195 nautical miles southeast of Kodiak Island Friday afternoon, moves to 185 nautical miles southeast of Middleton Island at 1,010 millibars Saturday morning. It is Friday, the 21st of May of 2021. The sun rose today at 5:35 a.m. It will set tonight at 10:40 p.m. and it will rise again tomorrow at 5:33 a.m. That's a total of 17 hours and 6 minutes of daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 41 seconds. The record high was 66 degrees in 1949, and the record low was 30 degrees in 1977 and 1985. Kodiak District tides, there was a high tide at 9:59 a.m. of 6.45 feet, a low tide at 4:24 p.m. of 0.69 feet, a high tide at 11:06 p.m. of 7.35 feet, a low tide at 5:17 a.m. of 1.54 feet, a high tide at 11:15 a.m. of 6.60 feet, and for west side tides, a high tide at 10:45 a.m. of 11.15 feet, a low tide at 5:09 p.m. of 1.80 feet. A high tide at 11:32 p.m. of 13.06 feet, a low tide at 5:57 a.m. of 2.13 feet, and a high tide at 11:54 a.m. of 12.11 feet. For community announcements, an advisory note to our village communities, scheduled maintenance is happening in Fairbanks again this weekend that will disrupt KMXT's service to all village translators beginning around midnight Friday of May 21st, that's today. KMXT will be off the air until service is restored, hopefully sometime on Sunday. If you have internet access, you can still listen to us on our web stream, but your signal won't return over your regular radios until their work is completed. If you have questions or continued loss of signal past Sunday, please call us up Monday, and we'll try and get things back to normal. Thank you for your understanding, and thanks for listening.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
KMXT is supported in part by Orion's Mountain Sports, featuring equipment, clothing, and footwear for your outdoor lifestyle. Orion's Mountain Sports, located at 1247 Mill Bay Road. Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the May 21st edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. I have returned from the land of... Instead of the sounds of red-winged blackbirds, frogs, trains, cranes, and one very aggressive Canada goose, I'm back in the land of rain, wind, and sea air, and happy to be here. Trips to the Midwest this time of year can be magical, though. The flowering trees were in bloom while I was there, making every tree-lined street a beautiful bouquet of color. But heat, humidity, and swarms upon swarms of mosquitoes were not far behind, so I was happy to return home in spite of the rain. Rain down here at sea level this time of year often translates into snow above the 1,000-foot level, and there's still quite a bit of snow up there. If you're planning to hike up Pyramid these days, for example, snowshoes are still a good idea for the higher elevations. Reports are that on sunny days, the skiing and boarding is hard to beat, so don't think winter sports are behind us just yet. Down here at sea level, there are plenty of signs of spring. The return of the gray whales and humpbacks, for example. Spring migrant birds are plentiful too. If you're out at Calson Bay, you might notice sandpipers like dowitchers, ducks like northern pintails and northern shovelers, and geese like brants. On Tuesday night, we get a special treat, a supermoon that goes into a total lunar eclipse in the wee hours of Wednesday morning. The supermoon will rise at about 10:16 p.m. on Tuesday, and the moon will be in partial eclipse by 1:45 a.m. on Wednesday. The full eclipse only lasts 14 minutes from 3:11 a.m. to 3:25 a.m. So let's hope for some clear skies. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.